The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everybody.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily.
All right, welcome in Dirty's Daily. As Clint is out, Brandon Scott is in. You can see him if you're on YouTube and Twitch. Also, our guy Tyler Milner producing this thing. Tyler, you have the latest update. We got a little bit yesterday from D'Amico Ryans, who said he'd be out for the year. Talked about a torn ACL, but you have even more news here, the latest on Tank Dell.
Yeah, we're learning more about the extent of these injuries sustained on that play last week, last game by Tank Dell. And it's not good. It's very, very bad news for Tank Dell and everything going on with his knee, to be honest with you. Multiple sources are reporting this now. Texans wide receiver Tank Dell, he suffered a torn MCL, a torn LCL, a torn ACL, a dislocated kneecap, and damage to the meniscus on that touchdown catch Saturday. The injuries are piling up for Jalen Petrie, and reports are also saying it is very possible
For Jalen Petrie or Tank Dell.
Tank Dell, sorry.
I'm about to say.
My bad.
Good God,
no,
Jalen.
No,
man.
Tank
Dell. Jalen again, too?
Tank Dell's knee we're talking about here. But they do say also that it is a real possibility right now for the Houston Texans that Tank Dell could miss the entirety of the 2025 season.
I mean,
that's not a surprise, right?
Tyler went through so many CLs. I mean, more CLs than I realized you could tear it one time.
I don't know that I was familiar with the LCL. I remember the PCL.
I've heard of the L's. I just haven't heard them all together at once torn.
Yeah.
So, I'm not exactly
kneecap,
sure how it
and
works.
Meniscus.
That sounds, and I'm not an expert on this part, but that sounds potentially career, if not ending, certainly career altering or threatening.
Yeah.
So, that puts a little bit more color and context on that conversation earlier about CJ, even though still it might have been a drastic reaction, but we're talking about a dude's career possibly being threatened by this one play.
Yeah, again, if you missed it, Tank Dell, we knew it was a torn ACL yesterday, but he also suffered a torn MCL, a torn LCL, dislocated kneecap, meniscus damage on that touchdown, and could miss the entire season next year as well. Because, hell, we know that the ACL alone is sometimes a 9 to 12 month injury.
Yeah.
So it is not a surprise. And the hope is that he is able to recover and return from this. But this is definitely I don't know how much worse that thing could get.
And this could be my lack of expertise talking, but I do wonder when that much stuff is wrong at once. Like, not, hey, I got to recover from this, and then this happens, hey, I got to recover from that, and it's like wear and tear. But when all of that happens at the same time, it does make me wonder how you put everything back together again and make it work the way it used to.
Tyler, do me a favor. Check, if you can, Willis McGahee, 2001. What was his diagnosis? That was the closest thing. Because I distinctly remember his kneecap sliding down towards his shin.
Yeah.
But he came back, and
and had a pretty good career in the NFL.
I've never heard that many ACLs together.
I don't remember what his was. I mean, his had to have been hell on wheels.
So similar, and again, I'm no, like y'all have been saying, I'm no doctor. So Tank has the torn ACL, MCL, and LCL.
And meniscus and kneecap.
Yeah. McGahee had a torn ACL, MCL, and PCL. Yeah.
And he had kneecap damage too, had to.
But I ain't hear no LCL in there.
No, but he switched out the LCL and he took the PCL.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
they just exchanged them.
They just had three. They both had three.
Okay.
LCL. A
lot of ligament damage.
So, but I'll just say Willis McGahee.
Yeah.
He came back and played and had a pretty good career with with Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind.
That's right.
Confuse him with the. I was about to say the Broncos, but that was another Kane.
Yeah.
That was Clint Portis. But he had a good career with Buffalo. So, and that was, hell, that was 2001 or 2004, something like that. So that was even a while back. So hopefully Tank can in some way get back. So that's the latest there with Tank Dell. I know for you, Brandon, you also wanted to look at the other injuries, right? It was already, and we talked about the depth tested at certain positions in that secondary.
Yep.
And Jalen Petrie was lost for the season. It was like, okay, damn, Jimmy Ward, he's going to step in. But what's after Jim Ward?
Yep.
And now Jimmy Ward is lost for the season as well. He's going to have surgery on that foot. And I know for you, and I think this is a big concern for everybody, is you're running out of bodies here and bodies that you could put there at that position to play. I know that's a big thing in your mind moving forward, not just the rest of the regular season, but the playoff.
Yeah, man. So if you got Jimmy Ward out, you already had Jalen Petrie out. Part of the news of the week is us understanding that this means that Kamari Lassiter is now thrust into that slot corner position, that nickel corner position where Jalen Petrie was playing and then where Jimmy Ward was playing in his place. Now, I think a lot of us have liked what we've seen from Kamari Lassiter playing the slot position and feel comfortable with him doing so. It's not really that as much as it is testing the depth that you spoke about on the outside, or that we've spoken a lot about. I know that I have on this station, even going back to training camp, the depth on the outside and what exactly that looks like and how comfortable do you feel with it. Now, a couple of weeks ago against Miami, it looked pretty good when I'd see Kamari Lassiter in the slot and Jeff Okuda bumped outside. Now, we understand Jeff Okuda has not been healthy all year either. So that's been part of the reason why we haven't seen as much of him. But I feel like now this is going to be a real, real test of the depth of that position. Now having to rely more, not because of Kamari Lassiter in the slot, I like that, but having to rely more on Jeff Okuda on the outside as somebody that we have not talked about or looked at much this season.
And then behind that, Miles Bryant is the other person.
Yeah.
2-7 in the nickel spot. While. And then Chris Boyd and D'Angelo Ross. And we remember D'Angelo Ross struggled in at least that game against the Packers. He seemed to struggle.
And I think that was more than, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like he's only out there because Jeff Okuda's not available to you.
Yeah, right.
You know, like you are playing with a little bit of fire here at this point, I feel like, in terms of the depth of that position and how compromised it actually is. I don't know, and I'm curious how Texans fans feel about that. How comfortable do you feel now about this secondary now that it is absent of Jalen Petrie and Jimmy Ward, and what that does with Kamari Lassiter? Puts him in a position where I think he can excel, but takes him out of a position that he was playing really well at and where you need somebody to play really well at opposite Derrick.
Like if you sit there and you cross your fingers, like the front line of this, you'd rather have Jimmy Ward and Jalen Petrie available.
Yes.
But the front line of, I feel like, all right, Derek Stingley, Lassiter, Okuda, those are your cover guys. Like, I feel like I can roll with that.
Yeah.
I feel like that one you feel like is doable. Like, let's say, hey, you got the Steelers in the first round of the playoffs. You got the Chargers in the first round of the playoffs. I feel like if those three guys are there, you can handle it. If any of those guys have any issues, then you feel, I think you feel a lot different. I think you feel different with what you have.
Yeah. Like if you were a cat with nine lives, it feel like you've used all nine of them at this point.
Yeah, you can't get, you ain't like, got another life with Super Mario, brother. You can't, but, there ain't another one there.
Because again, it did look good against Miami, and that was a hell of a test. All right. So we've seen it look good already. How much can you trust it, or how comfortable do you feel about it is the question. And we are going to get the answer because that's all that you have left. You are down to those options. Jeff Okudah, again, somebody who you haven't seen as much of, you know. Looked good against Miami, but haven't seen as much of it.
Text line coming through. Why didn't we sign Steven Nelson? I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah, I think you know the answer to that. I think you know the answer to that. Probably.
But again, like, to me, and the people are texting, like, I don't really come down and condemn Nick for this one, right? This is very much like, to me, like, it's hard to get mad at Dana Brown and company about the not having enough pitching. I mean, who knew 10 guys were going to go down before June, right?
Well, no. A couple of those guys were hurt going into training camp or going into the spring training and going into the beginning of the season.
A couple.
And there were guys available that they could have gotten.
A couple. You didn't think you were going to be down 10 guys by June.
No, but you knew you would be down a couple or that you could be down a couple.
Could be. Yeah. And you thought, like, all right,
Verlander chief among them.
I got seven behind it. I think I can roll. You didn't realize.
I don't know if they thought they had seven behind it. Thought they had five or six. They could have done more and should have done more.
They could have done more, but I
and
but
sh-
I,
no, okay. they, I'm sorry. They should have done more. 100%.
To me, I don't.
It was available to them.
I don't crush.
And there was no reason not to do it.
But
and the team the year before won because they had an excess of starting pitching.
Yeah,
the team that beat them.
And they
saw the formula.
And I could see them feeling, all right, man, we're. Whether you agree or not, I could see them feeling, all right, man, we got about 10 guys before we get to a dire strait.
You and them would be wrong.
But to this point, as we can agree to disagree, and I'll be right here. But to this point, like, yeah, I mean, you're like, hey, Jalen Petrie, we're going to bang him out. All right, then we're going to leave, you know, Jimmy Ward for the year. Hell, Kadar Holman, somebody I think they liked. We may lose. Like, they've just lost a lot of guys right here to where it's a point of, like, yeah, I can see why they didn't say to themselves, all right, man, we're going to load up and start getting extra guys. Because, I mean, you don't think you're going to lose both your nickel guys in a 3-week period.
No, I want to be clear about this. And there's receipts on this because we talked about it at the time. Like, when they signed Jeff Okudah, when they brought C.J. Henderson in.
Both those guys in.
I didn't feel bad about that. I felt good about that. You know, in terms of depth, in terms of competition. It wasn't until we got through training camp and we weren't seeing as much and it just didn't feel like it was clicking the way maybe they wanted it to. And then C.J. Henderson obviously didn't even make the team when I started looking around and saying, oh, there isn't as much depth here as I thought there was. So, no, I think they tried. I just don't think it worked. I don't think it worked.
Yeah. All right. We'll see what they do. If they, like I said, if they could just...
Hell, maybe it did. They still got time to figure it out. Like I said, it looked good against Miami.
This ain't the plan.
It still looked good.
This ain't what they want to be. I'm just saying, if they can just stay with, if they don't have any more injuries back there, I think this is something that can be functional. Can function. I don't know if they can survive another.
No.
And look and be able, like, you just gonna have guys out there where you gotta have your pass rush get there, and I mean right now. Because if they don't get home, it's gonna be problems. So
yeah, like, because there's not another guy that you feel. Who do you feel good about on the outside after any of these three guys, and then who do you feel good about in the slot after, say, just Kamari Lassiter? Is it Miles Bryant?
Yeah,
is that it?
I mean, someone texted in and said, don't forget Christian Harris. He could fill in and probably do a great job in the slot.
Well, I don't know about in the slot, but I would say going kind of more so to your base defense and effectively be in the slot, like, that might be the play.
It better be a lot of help.
And it also better not be, if we're talking about the three guys, and I'm not, you know, no disrespect to Jeff Okudah, but it also better not be Kamari Lassiter or Derek Stingley be the one to get hurt. Because if you go to your base defense, you still need both of those two guys, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it's got to work out that way, too.
All right, before we get finished here with Dirty's Daily, can we, I just, I believe Nick Sirianni deserves credit. And I think even in a loss against the Commanders,
I believe
he deserves credit. Like, listen, man, at some point, the guy who wins 10 in a row.
Oh, come on.
The guy who has his starting quarterback go out in the first half and then still in position to beat a playoff team on the road and have his quarterback get right and going right. And Kenny Pickett with them gloves look right in the game. And not to mention, this is a guy who has been to the playoffs every year since he's been the head coach, including a Super Bowl run.
Oh, my God.
Like, I think at some point,
get out of here,
we've got to give Nick Sirianni some credit.
Hold now, on, I,
who is, who, wait, who is we?
You. Your ass
no,
need to.
No, you might got to give Nick Sirianni
so
some
what,
credit.
So what, you just
but you, can
don't
have
think, you don't think you don't think he had nothing to do with this?
Well, he's obviously the coach.
Okay.
So he's on the team. I'll give you that. He's on the team. But that's not a good head coach, man. You can give him credit or not give him credit. I don't care. That's not a good head coach. That team is loaded, is talented, and I give Howie Roseman and whoever put that team together and gave him all them players, that's who I'll give credit to. He don't call. He an offensive coach that don't call the plays.
That's all right.
Get out of here.
Mike Tomlin is a defensive coach that don't call.
He ain't no Mike Tomlin. I'll be damned. You can see. You can go. You can go somewhere with that. Make Nick Sirianni your Mike Tomlin of the year if you will.
I'm not.
But you can have that, buddy.
I'm not saying he is. What I'm saying is,
I ain't giving him
that
man.
Like at some point, guys. At some point, like we start seeing his accomplishments and what he has done.
Man, sit down with that.
And now he can go and play toe to toe on the road with with a playoff team.
He drafted Jalen Carter. He signed Saquon Barkley.
He's coaching him.
Man, they don't need his coaching.
Okay, all right.
He ain't doing damn thing.
Right.
They out there balling.
I know. Yeah,
he ain't coaching nothing.
I know
he ain't coaching nothing.
I know
he don't coach the defense. He don't coach the offense.
I know
he just
two
stand there.
I know
and
he
look
had two
silly.
Coordinators who sucked ass with that before they got to him.
Yeah, no, he had two coordinators that carried him before, and now he got two. Now he's carrying him again. Yes.
What would have to happen for Nick?
He's a clown, man.
What would have to happen for Nick to get nothing?
Nothing. He's a clown.
What? Someone texted. It doesn't matter, Ron. Ten wins in a row. I mean, it's got to matter something. 10 wins in a row.
Shout out him for coaching. He's coaching the hell out of Jalen Carter. Get out of here.
He is, man.
He's making Saquon look otherworldly.
Yeah, they didn't look.
Because he played for an inept organization.
Yeah.
Now he plays for a competent one.
And now he's playing now
that has a bad head coach.
You know what you are right now?
I'm speaking the truth.
You're Clint with Joe,
dude.
That's what
is,
you're doing right now. You're a Clint. You're
good.
A Clint with Joe Espada.
He is highfalutin.
That is what you're doing right now. Speaking of Joe Espada and Dana Brown. He had some comments about Alex Brickman, and it just stops me in my tracks. I know this ain't Dana's fault, all of it. But, I mean, if Dana really feels this way, I think we know what time it is for the Astros moving forward. That's next.
Shout out to my guy, Alex Brickman.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
All right, Merry Christmas, Christmas Eve. Tomorrow is Christmas Day, and also tomorrow the Houston Texans will take on the Ravens here at NRG. More on that in a bit, but I do want to start here with the Astros. And Dana Brown was speaking at Christian Walker's press conference as he was introduced to Houston. This was him actually, though, Chandler Rome of The Athletic, asking him about Bregman talks. Because, Paredes is here. He plays a corner outfield. We know Walker plays first, so what's up? Here is Dana Brown's response to the Bregman talks.
Yeah, so the way I view it right now, it's Paredes is going to play third base, and Walker is going to play first base. And, Bregman's still a free agent.
Where did you guys go negotiating-wise? Did you guys up your offer at all?
Yeah, I think the negotiation stalled. You know, I won't get into specifics, but I feel like the negotiation stalled. I thought we made a really competitive offer and, showing that we wanted him back. But we had to pursue pursue other options. You know, we couldn't just sit there. And so, you know, we started to, you know, we locked in Paredes early in that trade, knowing that he could play third or first. And then when the opportunity to add another bat came up, you know, we just jumped on it. I felt like we were losing two bats that hit between 2 and 5. And so getting Paredes and Walker back, we added two more bats that's going to hit between 2 and 5.
All right, I do want to get to something he said, but I know for you, it's an easy question. Now we kind of see it, right? There's no Kyle Tucker. They traded him. They bring back Paredes, who is going to play third base. They bring in Christian Walker, who's going to play first base. So right now we can see it, right? Walker at first, Diaz behind the plate, Altuve, Pena, Paredes, and then in the outfield, Myers and Chaz McCormick, and then an open spot there with obviously the big fella Alvarez as the DH. Is this team better?
Doesn't feel like it, right? I'll say this. It's low vibrations. It is low vibrations.
Was it meh when you saw the Christian Walker?
No, and Christian Walker's a hell of a player. Like, He has been a good baseball player. I'm not mad at bringing in Christian Walker, especially given the hole that is at first base. So I'm good with that. Paredes, good baseball player. Don't have a problem with the signings, but I can't act like any of the players we're talking about are anywhere near as good as Kyle Tucker. His postseason performance is notwithstanding as of late. I understand that you got to kind of factor that into the whole equation as well. But he's a better baseball player than everybody that we're talking about. Everybody that's part of this conversation, Kyle Tucker is the best player among them. And you're taking
pretty clear too.
And you're taking him out. And then I would say Alex Bregman, even though Paredes is a nice backup plan or landing spot, I would say you are still downgrading there. I would say Alex Bregman. So you're losing the better players.
Yeah, of the four, those are the two best. Play.
Yeah, and so you're probably getting the third and fourth best players of the four players. And if you want to put Christian Walker ahead of Bregman, then you can say you're getting the second and fourth. But you're losing the best player, and you weren't even good enough last year to do more than what you did. So you probably needed to get better, not either get worse or stay the same. And I think at best, they stayed the same, and I think at worst, they got worse. It's low vibrations, and the question for me is now, can you accept the down year? How many down years are you willing to accept if that's what it comes down to?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah,
You think they're better? This is a better baseball team?
I don't know how you can say they are. I really don't, because I don't think they're a better baseball team right now, but I think for them, they're fortunate right now. They're in the division they're in, which helped them a lot last year. I would not be tricked into thinking what we saw last year is something that is a deal of they can compete with the top.
I was going to say compete, meaning what?
With the top. They can compete. I'm just talking about the division you can compete with, right?
I still think this is a team that can win that division. As currently constructed they're probably going to do something else.
Yeah, as long as they keep Framber and all that.
Yeah, they got to keep those
you know,
pitches
upright. I think they can win the division. But like we saw, they tracked down the Mariners fast, being 10 games plus under. But there's a reason. Like, the Mariners are nobody else in this division is really a really good baseball team.
Yeah.
And then you saw them against the Tigers, and they dispatched them in two games.
Right.
Right, you're not competing with the top of it like you were. You could just look at the teams. I'm going to tell you what, Tyler, when you played that cut, the thing that jumped out to me is when my man said, we felt like we made a competitive offer to Alex Bregman.
Yeah, well, I mean,
biggest offer in Houston Astros history, man.
Yeah, it depends on where you stand on side of the argument on what a competitive offer is or should be for Alex Bregman, because I think that is up for debate and conversation.
Well, especially when he misses the first two months of every season.
The competitive...
Sorry, Breggy.
The competitive, and now that's coming out now. Now the Bregman misses two months now. It's coming.
We're talking about negotiation.
Let's just build Bregman's contract to where he doesn't start getting paid until like June or July.
I know. I think Jim would try.
So
what was it? 6 years, 156. What do you think
the realistic numbers are going to be when he signs.
Is Braggy being ridiculous?
And I know you watch this thing.
I think it's going to approach $200 million.
So we're thinking probably 7 years in the $190 to $200 million
range. There we go.
Yeah, and listen, whether or not he should get that or not, yo 6 years, 156 ain't competitive, and you know it ain't.
Well, but see, like, that's why I say the word competitive means on which, if you think that, hey, he might get this, but he ain't worth it, then this is what is competitive to us. Like, this is, maybe we're not competing with the folks that are going to overpay you, but for what you are actually worth, this is what is competitive.
Okay, and what I'm saying is, if that's how they're going to operate, I think they're going to do that with a lot of people. Like, right now, I think Max Fried set the bar, and it's going to be higher for Framber Valdez. 30 and 31 years old.
Yeah.
8 years to 30 or whatever. And if they roll through and say, I think we've got a competitive offer. We're going 6 years, 160. Competitive. That's what we think it is.
Yeah. But if they say, hey, look, with all due respect to Framber, he ain't Max Fried, and so we ain't going to pay him Max Fried's money, that's competitive to them.
I think what you're saying is something that we're about to hear and feel a lot from the Astros.
Yeah.
I think the Astros' competitive offer and what they feel a player is and what the market is for a player, I think they're always going to be lower. And give it a reason and an excuse of why they can't pay somebody.
Yeah. I'm going to be clear. I think with most of the players, I don't actually mind that. To me, there should be exceptions to these rules. I don't mind them having these rules and standards and being willing to let guys go if they feel like they're being overpaid. But there are certain guys, to me, that you just go ahead and pay. Kyle Tucker would have been one of those to me.
Framber is that to me, too.
I'm good. I'm good on front. I can't get over the fake.
You have bits. A front. Yeah, you have.
I cannot. I'm good.
You have a Framber thing. I know you do.
I'm good on that.
Even though everything, which would indicate like
not everything. He's been good. He's been pretty good.
I think he's a
good pitcher.
I think when you look at what you have, and you're trying to still compete, I think everything would. Like, he's not perfect.
No, I would rather perfect. Have him than not.
That's, he's not perfect.
I'll say
no
that.
One's, yeah, no
I would rather
perfect.
Have him than not.
I mean, you got a guy who is finished.
I'm not desperate to pay him $200 or $300 million.
Yeah, you got a guy who's, so, yeah, you've got a guy who's finished top 10 in the Cy Young Award.
Good for him. He can have a cookie.
And who
you can pay him $300 million. I'll give him a cookie.
Don't worry. Somebody will. And you'll have
fun.
You'll have Hunter Brown until it's time to pay Hunter Brown.
Yeah,
and then they'll say they've got a fair price to Hunter Brown.
There's more where they come from.
Yeah, I bet it is. Yeah. it's wild. We'll see. I'm just saying, as you said, I mean, down years.
Yeah.
They'll keep going down, but you keep saying, My competitive offer is $40 million.
Honestly, though,
behind.
This is Dana Brown's time to shine, though. He's supposed to be, you know, heavy scout, the dude that's got the eye for talent. Hey, well, we need you to go find the cheap talent, buddy, because we ain't paying nobody, for sure.
Oh, wow. All right, third market. All right, Danny Cannell, third biggest city in the country. Danny Cannell, our college football analyst. I can't wait to hear from him, because I gotta see what he thought about the first round of the 12-team playoff. We'll hear from him coming up next.
Longhorn Nation, we're back!
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, let's head to the phone lines as The Drive continues. Clint is out today, but Brandon Scott is in. And always enjoy talking to our guy, Danny Cannell. Danny joins us courtesy of betonline.net. Check out BetOnline for updated college football playoff, bowl game, and 2025 opening Heisman lines. All right, Danny, I've been
ever since we found out you're going to be on the show, I'm really intrigued by your thoughts to this simple question. Was it a good first weekend for the college football playoff?
Oh, no. It was gross, right? Yeah. It sucked. There's no way to sugarcoat it. Four games, all pretty non-competitive. You know, the score is very misleading in a couple of them. You know, I know Notre Dame, Indiana was only a 10-point win, but there were 14 points late. You know, the Clemson-Texas game, you know, it was kind of close, but in the end, it really wasn't, you know, that close. And then you had absolute blowouts in the other ones. I hated it from the perspective of college football fans. Like, I am a passionate college football guy, right? That's my thing. I want the best to be on display. But unfortunately, that's kind of sports, right? I mean, that's happened before. I remember when I was growing up, I remember Super Bowls were blowouts. There was a string of them when I even went to one where Steve Young actually did the thing where he got the monkey off his back and he threw six touchdown passes against the Chargers, and it was an absolute blowout. Like, and the fact we got four of them, I think there's two things. One, it's a bit of bad luck, right? We just got unfortunate. And then two, I really think there's an easy fix for next season, which they may or may not tweak a little bit. In 2 years, remember, this was a two-year experiment with the 12 teams. So after next year, the second year of the 12-team playoff, they're going to make some dramatic changes. But if they want to make a simple tweak, I think it's really just rank the teams properly going into the playoff and don't worry about automatic buys for the top four ranked conference champions, right? That kind of threw things off because, you know, you would have had Indiana playing against Clemson, you know? And so, like, to me, that game probably is more compelling and it weeds out one of those teams and maybe prepares them better. Like, Indiana looked completely overwhelmed on the road. Maybe if they play against Clemson, they win. It kind of prepares them a little bit better. Boise State would have been playing SMU. Like, those are just some matchups that are a little bit more evenly matched. But I still think that is part of college football, separating out the kind of pretenders from the real championship contenders. And we might see blowouts this weekend, too. But according to the odds makers, we should get two spectacular games between Georgia and Notre Dame and Oregon and Ohio State. Like, there should be some really good games this weekend. And who knows? Maybe one of those games that are supposed to be blowouts, maybe they aren't, and maybe we do get that upset. But it was sort of the perfect storm swirling on that first weekend, which stunk for college football fans. But I'm trying to just keep everybody engaged and say, let's see how this whole thing plays out before we're ready to just jump off a bridge.
See, Danny, I thought it was interesting that you actually think that there is a fix. That was actually going to be my next question to you. What about it needs fixing, if anything? My thought on this for the entire time has been, man, it might just be too many teams. I know we want to watch all the games, and you can just give me all the games and I'll watch every single one of them without complaining whether it's a blowout or not. I'm just going to watch the games. But it does feel like it's probably too many teams. Even if they seed it differently, we're still talking about it feels like certain teams that are just not really competing for a national championship, like an SMU, like an Indiana, like a Tennessee. Like it still feels like it might be too crowded of a field.
It could be. I think there's a couple things. One, we're just kind of in this new era of parity where their talent is starting to spread throughout college football. I mean, I think that's one of the reason there was such debate about, you know, Vanderbilt beating Alabama, you know, Arkansas beating Tennessee. And they've done that before. But even Indiana being 11-1 is something we haven't seen in the history of college football. Like, Indiana's never been that good. What if they get better and they start closing that gap? And I do think with the revenue share that's coming down the road, which starts next season, that'll give a lot more teams an opportunity. The collectives will still be there, so there still will be some blue bloods. But I think most importantly, as painful as that first round was, I do think we're going to get rid of some of those, like the contenders. And so the next round, again, I mentioned that one, there might be another blowout. But even in the 4-team playoff, when we only had four, there were a lot of lopsided games. We saw a national championship where TCU lost by, you know, 60 points to Georgia. I don't think that happens because they're going to get weeded out in this process on the way there. And I think we just need to let this play out. Let's, even if it's only 2 years, let's see how it goes, see if there's still blowouts. Because I do think the field is deeper than it's been. I get the point about maybe we only need four teams. Some people say maybe we only need two. But I still find value in letting those teams. And, like, I thought it really enhanced the regular season. And it gave programs like SMU and Indiana hope for the first time that they actually could play for a national championship, which if we only have four teams, that really kind of demolishes a lot of team seasons in November, where it gave them hope, it gave them an opportunity, and maybe 1 year they do capture lightning in a bottle and they are able to pull off an upset. Even if it's only one round, I still think that would really, you know, provide a lot of hope and enthusiasm to a lot of fan bases who have never had it before.
Damn, they did lose by 60 in that game. Yeah.
yes, that was ugly.
I was about to say, Danny, I don't. There's no reason for you to just take out the TCU people, but I guess that was 65-7, wasn't it?
Real rough.
My goodness. Danny joins us courtesy of BetOnline.net. Check out BetOnline for updated college football playoff bowl game in 2025 opening Heisman lines. I do want to get to Texas, and is there a thought that they may be on upset alert with Arizona State? But one thing before you get to that, Danny, you talk about a change. Everybody's talking about the reseeding, which I think that's understandable. These teams, to me, are too close when it comes to the seeding to give someone and give teams such a huge home field advantage. I don't know if you use the other bowl games, but that was the thing that jumped out to me, was it is such an advantage in football, especially college football, to play at home. And I just don't think that any of those teams separated themselves enough to get that large of advantage. Like, to me, if you want to see better, I think those games would have been better if they were at a neutral site. And to me, if you want to see better football, to me, I want to see that. But you can comment on that. And also, do you think Texas is on upset alert with Arizona State?
I love the way you're thinking, because I would tend to agree. I mean, and that's one of the things I think makes college football really special. So I've heard two lines of thinking, and I'm down for both of them. I want to see more of those games. So if you wanted to do the first two rounds there, I'd be okay with that. But that doesn't solve the problem you're talking about. Like, hey, what if we flip-flopped it and made the first round that we just watched this past weekend at neutral site games, like you were talking about, and then the second round, which actually were those teams that get a bye. And yeah, again, I don't really think rewarding. Arizona State or Boise State should have been rewarded a bye. Like, I think that's one of the biggest flaws that nobody's really talking about, because we're talking about the blowouts. But then, because really the bye is good, but if you give them the bye and a home field game, that would be insane. And also, again, kind of weeding out some of those teams on the way there, you might weed out some of those teams that truly aren't ready for that road atmosphere, like an SMU or like a, you know, everybody was. I mean, there were all of them. So it's not, because Tennessee has played in big road atmospheres, right? But they didn't look ready for Ohio State and what they went into. And they had 40% of the stadium with Tennessee fans, you know, like, so I do like the idea of, one, if you wanted to do the first two rounds and have them all on home fields, but or if we flip-flop the weekend and had that first weekend at neutral sites and then the first round, or the, you know, for the bye teams, which would be the second weekend of the college football playoff, I think that would be, you know, a better system, and I think it would give those teams that earn the byes that home field advantage, which I do think is huge, as you mentioned. All right, so what do you want to know about Texas? So they'd be on the upset alert?
Yeah. Should the Texas fans, we got Aggie on the show, but the Texas fans out there, should they be worried about this Arizona State matchup?
So I don't think so, but I've been hard on Texas all year long. I thought they would lose at Kyle Field. Like, I thought they haven't really played up to their A game, right? Like, what we saw from Ohio State versus Tennessee was like, oh, wow. It was like, oh, my gosh, that team can win the national championship. I don't even know if we've seen that yet for Texas, which can be a really good thing, right? Because if they have another gear, which I do think they're going to need if they want to get through this round and through Oregon or Ohio State and then eventually through a team from the other side of the bracket, I think they're going to have to bump it up a notch. And I think they've got it in them. Like, the best game I'd say I've probably seen from them was Florida. But Florida didn't have a lot of their players. Actually, they were really good against Michigan, too. But, like, for a while, they've been kind of just playing with their food a little bit. And even against Clemson, like, Cade Klubnik kind of got after that secondary, which had been so strong all season long. Like, their defense had been almost untouchable as far as throwing it against them. And Cade Klubnik was able to have a lot of success through the air. So I don't think they're on upset alert. I think even against Arizona State, I don't think they need their A game. I think, but if they do, it could be another blowout. Like, that is what I'm concerned about. And I do think Arizona State is probably not as good as Clemson. So on that game, I'm not that worried about Texas getting upset. The point spread, maybe I'm a little bit tantalized by taking a shot at the 13.5. If it gets to two touchdowns, then I probably like it a lot more. But I don't think Texas gets beaten this round. I do think they advance.
Danny, what are they missing? That's the part that I'm struggling with. I hate to be the, you know, pile on Quinn Ewers guy, but it feels like they're a quarterback away. Am I wrong on that?
I think it is an identity, right? I mean, there's a lot of teams, you know exactly what they are. Take Ohio State, for example. They've got a ton of talent on offense, right? And they're going to be a high-powered offense, which they actually got away from their identity, and that's why they lost to Michigan, because they tried to be something they're not. They tried to run it right at Michigan's defense. Then we saw what they can do when they open it up. Notre Dame is a Riley Leonard running quarterback type of offense and a great defense, right? They're very clearly, they're not going to throw it for 300 yards. They're going to run their quarterback. They're going to run their running backs, and they're going to try to maul you. Texas, and maybe it's because of injuries, right? They've had Kelvin Banks is injured. I know he's back. Isaiah Bond's been injured. He was out. Maybe he comes back. They've had running backs hurt all season long. Like, and even Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers has been hurt. He missed a couple games when Arch Manning stepped in. And now there's this offense where you run in Arch Manning every once in a while and you utilize him. And Quinn's a really good passer, but he's been inconsistent. So I do think that's probably the biggest issue I have with Texas is, what is their identity? Like, what do they want to be? They are a great defense. We established that. But on offense, I feel like they're like, cause every time I think of Steve Sarkisian offense, I think of, you know, a team that's able to put up monster points on the board, a quarterback that throws for three touchdowns and 350 yards and just torches opposing defenses. The great news is they've still won the way they've been playing. But when that offense struggles and it starts to sputter like it did against Georgia twice, and Quinn Ewers gets hit with an interception bug, then I'm a little bit more concerned about them. So I think that's probably my biggest issue with Texas, that they really haven't established identity, whether it's Quinn Ewers' inconsistency, whether it's injuries. And, you know, I just don't think they've established a true identity. But they have been like a chameleon almost, where they've figured out, all right, this game we need to be a physical team, you know, that finds out a way to win this game. This game we're going to figure out how maybe we do have to throw it around a little bit more. But they really haven't come out with a true identity yet as a team.
All right, Danny, hopefully this weekend we see more compelling matchups in this next round of things. I know you'll be watching them. We'll watch them as well. Hopefully it gets better. Thanks for jumping on with us, Danny.
Appreciate you guys, man. Have a great Christmas tomorrow. Merry Christmas Eve, and we'll talk to you soon.
Same to you, Danny. Danny Cannell joins us courtesy of BetOnline.net. Check out BetOnline for updated college football playoff, bowl game, and 2025 opening Heisman lines. If you've not heard the latest on Tank Dell, we've got more info on his injury and now maybe an understanding of how long he could be out. We'll discuss that coming up next right here live on the Drizzive.